To the readers for today. I am very deliberately not going to touch the first two readings. And that's partly because we don't have time to do that today. And partly because this last gospel reading that Stephanie just read to us resonates quite strongly with me, because about 12 years ago, this last week, I went to a job interview to a group of five parishes in rural Devon. Part of a two-day interview process was that the bishop assigned to us a reading and we had to do a 5-minute brief sermon on it to the interview panel. Excuse me, that was new to me. And when I opened the reading and it started with, Jesus said, "To what shall I compare this generation? It is like children sitting in the marketplace and calling to one another. We played the flute for you and you did not dance. We wailed and you did not mourn." I was less than best pleased, because I thought the bishop was trying to catch me out with some obscure passage that I didn't really like at all, and was not one I'd read very often over the years. It turns out that he wasn't trying to catch me out. It was the gospel for the following Sunday, Pentecost 5, or as the Church of England calls it, just to be different, Trinity 4. And the joy of the lectionary, the joy of having an order that we follow through 3 years, is that we don't just get to pick the scriptures we like. We have to actually struggle with those parts that are difficult and dark and disturbing. We have to listen to the passages that are obscure and unpleasant. As it turns out, the bishop liked what I had to say on that Sunday, just to close that story up a bit. And he even said afterwards, "I'm going to steal some of that for my sermon." So that was very encouraging. And he gave me the job. And the job I was going to stay at for many years until I ended up here. But God works in mysterious ways. Thanks be to God. And I think there's an old Hebrew proverb that says, "God laughs when people make plans." But back to my brief thoughts for today. Because in a minute, they're going to be brief, because Patrick is going to introduce Daniel to us, and we're going to hear some of Daniel's story. It's a story of the transgendered community, and a story we need to hear, because as Mick Brody, who is part of St. John the Divine's community, once said to me, so often when we use the letters LGBTQ2SI+, the T is silent. Just as we struggle with parts of our scriptural story, and when they pop up, they come as a surprise or make us uncomfortable or confuse us, those stories we'd rather skip over, we need to hear as a church the stories of those whose voices have been suppressed or drowned out, to hear the experiences of those who have been victimized or vilified by the church and by society. We need to hear those stories because there is no one who is voiceless. There are only those whose voices are ignored and suppressed. Just as at this time, we need to be listening to the experience and standing with the black and brown communities, the indigenous communities of these lands, the queer, the sexually and gender marginalized communities, and particularly those at the intersections of all of these communities. We, the majority voice, need to educate ourselves. We need to stop asking the oppressed to do the education for us and find out for ourselves. Because as Valerie Kaur, an American Sikh activist, lawyer, and speaker says, we live in a world where black bodies are still seen as criminal. Brown bodies are still seen as illegal. Trans bodies are still seen as immoral. Indigenous bodies are still seen as savage. The bodies of women and girls are still seen as someone's property. We need to change our own perceptions and those of the world around us. Today's gospel speaks of the need to be open to wisdom, to learn to dance and to mourn, to learn to break bread together and to fast, to no longer ignore the voice of the Spirit that tells us to be wise, to be different, to be active in dismantling our own attitudes and those of the world. But even more, to work to undo those structures which privilege those of us of white skin, those of us who are cisgendered or heterosexual, those structures which perpetuate patriarchy and a colonized mindset from which many of us benefit without ever realizing it, and within which many are disadvantaged because of the color of their skin or their poverty or their mental health or their cultural background or who they love or how they identify. We've used the image of darkness within the church and indeed in many different faith situations and in society to represent evil or fear or ignorance. Those images of darkness have so often found their way into our liturgy and practice, with light and whiteness being associated with purity and goodness and rightness. In our community at St. John's, we have been seeking to undo those images in our liturgy, reminding us that we need darkness as a place of mystery, as a place of nurture, as a place of rest. We need that as well as light. Valerie Kaur says that perhaps this darkness we feel in our world at this time is not the darkness of the tomb, but of the womb, the pain of new birth. And what needs to come to birth is a new world, a new justice, a place where all are valued and none excluded. And that begins with our openness, our willingness to embrace the things we do not understand, to be nurtured by mystery, to learn and to listen. And I hand over to Patrick and to Daniel. You are both very welcome, both beloved. Thank you for being here to share your story.
Well, Gomi, you don't know how I feel about signs being delivered from above. And what you don't know is that when I came out 30 years ago, all I knew about is you were gay or you were straight. Or you might be bisexual, but you hadn't made up your mind yet. That's how it was given to me. About 3 years ago, I started to work on the rest of the letters in this acronym, which has grown over the years. And then I met this wonderful person sitting next to me. This person sitting next to me taught me what it's about, the struggle of being transgender, something I knew absolutely nothing about. And as a gay man, it's a responsibility of the LGBT community to understand everybody in this acronym. If we don't work together to work towards our own justice and our own acceptance as a group, we won't succeed. So I was so happy when Daniel said he would come to speak to us this morning, because his story is amazing. And I know that you will surround him with the love that he deserves. So I give you Daniel.
In Brené's book, The Gift of Imperfection, she says, owning our story and loving ourselves through the process is the bravest thing we'll ever do. It is both an honor and privilege to be asked by Patrick here at St. John Divine and Bishop Logan, recently retired, to stand before you on what is traditionally known to the LGBTQIAS2S+ community in Victoria as Pride Parade Sunday and share my journey with you all. It was just last year that my children and I marched and sat on the gay marriage float in the Victoria Pride Parade. Never in a million years did I imagine that I'd trade being scantily clothed, leading the Pride Parade on my motorcycle, to sharing my story with you this morning. Actually, I never thought I would ever step foot back in a church after the way the LGBT community folks have been treated by many Christians and other religious people. Over the past 30 years or so, I have studied other religions, and even to this day, I don't label myself as Christian. I consider myself to be a spiritual person, and I'm on a spectrum when it comes to religion and spirituality. There isn't just one way. My earliest memories of church are going to worship with my parents and siblings every Sunday morning. No ifs, ands, or buts. At that time, church was just a building. It wasn't until my later years that I actually really understood that church is not a building, it is the people. Just a little over 2 years ago, I was at a church service at the Abbey located here in Victoria, a wonderful community of people that are kind, loving, and inclusive. The Reverend Rob informed the congregation that we were coming into the season of Lent and explained that Lent had traditionally been a time when folks have chosen to be baptized and invited people to be baptized if they hadn't already been. After hearing the announcement, I had a conversation with the Reverend Anita and asked her if I could be rebaptized. And if so, would she be willing to do it? In short, she replied, "You have always been a child of God, and He's always known and seen you." Those were some powerful words. After several conversations with the Reverends Anita, Rob, and Megan from the Abbey community, we all agreed that I was worthy of having a baptismal remembrance and name-changing ceremony. Together with dear friends, my family, and the Abbey folks, we celebrated and reaffirmed that God has always loved and seen me. I must say that there was a lot of surprise and shock from my fellow LGBT community friends. Things like, "You go to church? You're a Christian?" "Yes, I go to church, and you can too." There are many versions of my story that I've been working on, but this is the one I've chosen to share with you all today. In many ways, I feel like I'm an invisible man competing in a marathon, and the finish line keeps moving farther away, out of my reach. No sooner do I overcome one challenging obstacle than I'm faced with yet another. You see, I'm a person living with multiple barriers, and throughout my lifetime, I've had a history of not being believed. When people look at me, they can't see that I have invisible disabilities. When people look at me, they don't know that I'm hearing impaired. They don't know how difficult it is to co-parent. What? They also don't know that I was diagnosed with PTSD shortly after the birth of my twin sons. One of my sons had a spontaneous brain hemorrhage shortly after birth, which required him to spend a tremendous amount of time in the NICU, and as a result has had several special or unique needs. These needs require me to constantly be advocating and navigating government policies and the medical and educational systems today. There are a multitude of appointments and diagnostics that are ongoing for him, while at the same time, I'm coping with my own disabilities and transition. All this creates a lot of anxiety. When I was born, I was assigned female because of the appearance of the outside of my body, namely my genitals. I was raised and socialized as female. I was baptized as Lutheran. I was attracted to females, therefore, I assumed I identified as lesbian at the age of 19, and probably a whole lot younger, but I didn't know that there was a label for it. I've since come to realize that labels are for jars. At that point, I was still living with my parents and I came out. I was told that I must move out of our family home. My mother disowned me and told me that she did not have a daughter any longer, and then she dreamt my funeral and that I was dead to her. At that time, being in the LGBTQ community was not accepted by the church, or probably not for most religions. I remember my father secretly calling me from work to check in and ask me how I was. At one point, they called a family meeting so that my parents and siblings could tell me how they felt about me, which was not positive. Needless to say, I had a harsh and painful transition into adulthood when young adults seem to need the most guidance, support, and assurance. Sometimes I'm amazed that I'm still on this earth. I'm happy to report today, though, that my family did eventually come around and have supported me ever since. I've had many short-term relationships in my 20s and 30s. I suppose that's quite typical for young adults. In my 30s, though, I decided that I wanted to be a parent. I took an adoption course, a foster parent course, and began fertility treatments as a single female. After a couple of years of trying to get pregnant in a variety of different ways, I finally got pregnant via IVF. Sadly, I miscarried. After my third attempt with IVF, which also failed, I met a woman. We became partners, and she offered to help me. On our first attempt with IVF together, I tested positive for a twin pregnancy. If you know anybody who has had a twin pregnancy, you'll know that they aren't fun. Shortly after the birth of our children, my partner and I separated. At the age of 44, I gave birth to healthy children. Just over 5 years ago, what I thought was a rare form of breast cancer resulted in me in coming out as a transgendered male. Many people think that being trans and transitioning is all about surgeries and body parts. Although that is part of it, for some of us, it's not most of it. I have been told many times that I'm brave and courageous, which I actually think is true. However, I feel like I've spent an awful lot of time learning how to socially function to fit in. It took me a long while to realize that I don't actually want to fit in. I want to belong. It hasn't been about changing who I am. It's about refining who I am without apology. I'm a trans person and I will not be erased. I've been going to counseling and during an awful lot these days and doing a lot of personal work over the past few years. I have learned that I'm a remarkable human being. Who happens to be highly sensitive, empathic, strong, and caring. I am resilient and resourceful. Yet, I still have a struggle with the long-standing belief that I'm not good enough. Perhaps some of you may relate. While it's a privilege to be both mom and dad to my boys, there are even more expectations and responsibilities for me to be and meet as a parent. And sometimes I feel I have a responsibility to apologize for all the questionable forms of white cisgendered men before me who have modeled inappropriate behaviors and attitudes about how to be male. This is a challenge for me, and I'm so committed to teach my boys that self-care is vital for everyone who wants to be healthy, and that it's more than okay to be vulnerable, compassionate, kind, and it's more than okay to be different from others. Now that I know that I do have value and that I am worthy, but most of all, I've come to know that I am enough, particularly in the eyes of God. Some people have asked me why, after all this time, I would choose to transition so late in life. My answer has always been, I owe it to my children to live an honest and happy life. Because I've experienced with more than one gender, I'm more conscientious of my language. However, I still react or act in more of feminine and female ways than a cis male. That is a person who is okay with the gender they were assigned at birth. I'm looking at experiences in life through a different set of lenses, somewhat like a superpower. Many of my experiences are enriching and rewarding, but I've also had a lot of challenges. If someone was to ask me if I could do my life all over again, I'd say it hasn't been an easy road, but it's the only road. The right road for me. I may be lacking in some ways of having most of the people on board and in support and get it, but I know that I am living and loving authentically. And there is nothing easy about living authentically. Difficult questions. Very recently during COVID-19, one of my sons asked me why I would ever return to the church after being away from it for so many years. At the time, I didn't have an answer for him. Often, it usually takes me a few days or a week to really give it some thought. And he says, oh, yeah, I'll get, you know, have an answer like in a week or so, Dad. But anyways, we've had many conversations about the church over the last couple of years. Both of my children have learned in school about how Christians have treated Indigenous people. I've talked to him about reconciliation. I've talked to him about reconciliation, and then when we know better, we do better. I've explained to him that's why what many Christians and other people all over the world are doing, even with the LGBTQ people. Shortly after the birth of my children, I thought I couldn't possibly raise my children alone. I was overwhelmed. But then I started taking my babies to Grace Christ Lutheran Church here in Victoria. And the people there took turns holding my babies and praying for us. They were so kind. Pastor Brenda baptized my children. And during that time, I met several amazing people with very kind hearts. And we have become and still are friends to this day. Several years have gone by now, and we are currently attending the Abbey, and one of my sons helps with the communion, and we continue to be supported by our faith community. Often at the services, you'll find me sitting or standing near the back of the church for parts of the service. It's then when I feel safe enough to let my guard down and count my blessings, which is almost always accompanied by tears, and often I weep. Church has now become a safe place for me to reflect and show up with all my imperfections. I always leave the church feeling uplifted, connected, loved, worthy, and supported. At times, I've been so angry with God. I've questioned many people of faith and asked why God chose to lead me down this particular path for my life. I've often thought there must be some sort of higher purpose for me. I've come to realize that although I've had so many challenges, I've had many more incredible blessings. And that is not the experience of many, many, many LGBT community folks. I feel incredibly lucky to be blessed with two beautiful children and a village of people who have chosen to walk alongside us. I've been blessed with so many gifts and have become such a strong and resilient human being. I've accomplished and overcome some very hard things in life, and I am grateful for my privilege. And I've made a promise to myself and God that I will use my privilege for the goodness of humanity. In closing, my wish for you today is that you will consider these final words. Love your neighbor who doesn't look like you, think like you, love like you, speak like you, pray like you, vote like you. Love your neighbor, no exceptions. Amen.
Amen.